Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Fit Finance Sessions. My name is Charlie Redding. I'm the founder and owner of Efficient Portfolio. And this is our second edition of the Fit Finance Sessions. So I'm joined here by Tom Senegals, who's one of the financial planners at Efficient Portfolio, Henry Ellison, who's also a financial planner here at Efficient Portfolio, Tim Webb, who's a financial planner here at Efficient Portfolio as well, and Toby Colton, who is a technical manager, so one of the power planners that has does a lot of the work behind the scenes for our clients. And today we wanted to touch on and dive into a pretty hot topic as far as our industry is concerned, and certainly as far as our regulator is concerned, and that is final salary pension schemes. Now, obviously, people have these amazing final salaries pension schemes that have been built up by employed by a larger company, but they do have the opportunity as to whether they should transfer or not. And because of all the pension flexibility rules, that opportunity to transfer has become more appealing, but with flexibility has come complexity. And so whether it's a good idea to transfer or not is a difficult call, and there is a lot of craziness going on in the industry, both from fear of the regulatory view and all that sort of stuff. So we wanted to spend a bit of time talking about these final salary pensions. So I suppose, Tom, let's kick this off. What are you seeing out there in the final salary pension world at the moment?
I think people are offering or being offered significantly higher transfer values than what they've had in the past, and therefore lots of people are coming to us because suddenly it seems like a large amount of money, and for some it is. And I think for the right person it can be the right thing. It can also be the wrong thing for the wrong person. I think that's why you're seeing a lot of people worried about what happens, because I think there are certain incentives for people to transfer out of the scheme, both for the client, the firm, and the advisor. And it's about making sure that those interests are always aligned with the client's best interests. I think as long as you're doing that, then that's fine.
Brilliant. Henry, is it worth you just kind of summarising why should a client consider transferring out? What are somebody's options when they've got a final salary pension scheme?
Yeah, so at the moment, the final salary scheme provides a guaranteed lifetime income. Typically, it's linked to a measure of inflation, so it goes up through their retirement. And then often it has a spouse's benefit, so their spouse might get half when they die. However, at the point that the spouse dies or the individual dies, that's the end of the pension, and it pretty much stops there. And one of the reasons a lot of people are looking to transfer is that the benefit of transferring is that they can move it into something like a SIP or a personal pension. Potentially, they can then still look to match that income, but if they haven't used that whole pot up to provide them with an income for the rest of their lives, that pot of money can then be passed on to the younger generation. So it becomes something of a legacy that can be utilised.
Brilliant. And Tim, how does the client get a more flexible retirement as a result of transferring or staying within the main scheme?
No, they do so. So as Henry said a minute ago, the staying in the scheme, the final salary pension would deliver you the guaranteed income, which you can't have less or more in any given year. It is going to stay the same, obviously, after being linked to inflation from that point onward. But from transferring out, you can. It's a lot more of a dynamic environment for the client to be in. They can draw however much money they want to per month, per year, whatever it might be. But then they've got the additional investment risk element to it as well. So whilst the income can fluctuate, the general pot can fluctuate as well. So there's that additional risk as well.
Okay.
But yeah, generally speaking, it's a lot more dynamic and fluid environment for the client to be in. But as long as they understand the restrictions of, you know, all the pros and cons of being in that environment versus staying, and, you know, if they prefer to have security, or they're very keen for that, or they don't have much experience with financial markets in general, then transferring, arguably, just on that point alone, might not be the best option. But as long as they understand the pros and cons, then puts them in the best place to make a best informed decision, I suppose.
Okay. So, Henry, you're saying that by transferring out, you can potentially leave some of that money that's left over to your children. Tim, you're saying that there is more flexibility in how you draw your money, but you're also highlighting that there's risks. Toby, do you want to kind of summarise what are the risks of transferring away from your final salary scheme? Or what are the risks of not transferring?
I think one of the biggest risks, obviously, as we mentioned, that the final salary scheme provides a guaranteed income for life. So first and foremost, you need to make sure and identifying the client's objectives and needs at outset. Then once you've got that, and we've done our research to look what's actually underneath the bonnet and how the current scheme would grow and the expected inflation figures. You then need to assess the client's other assets and their capacity for loss, as kind of everyone's alluded to. For some people, it's going to be the right thing to do. And if you can afford to take a bit of risk, then maybe that additional flexibility is a good thing, and it can give clients potentially a very tax-efficient vehicle in order to pass wealth down through the generations. Alternatively, if it's going to be the main source of income for some people, then they may be a bit more risk-averse. They may want to avoid exposing their retirement fund to unnecessary risk. And also, if they've got a lower attitude to risk, then moving into a money purchase scheme, a money purchase pot, where the size of that will be dependent on the underlying fund growth, where there's a low attitude to risk and the expected returns are going to be a lot lower, then in those circumstances, probably retaining the final salary scheme is in the client's best interest. But I mean, at the moment, inflation has been at an all-time low. Realistically, it could, or I can only foresee it going one way. So for clients with a good capacity for loss who want that additional flexibility, then even despite the inflation proofing that defined benefit schemes can offer, then maybe they actually could potentially lose its value in real terms once higher inflation levels have actually been seen.
Great, thank you, Toby. I think you can tell that Toby's got the technical side of our business well covered, because I think what he was trying to say, or what I did say, was that risks are that, yes, if you've transferred out, potentially you could run out of money. But the risk of staying in is that with high inflation, your income is going to get eroded every year. And essentially, so your risk is that your income gets devalued over time. But of course, that means that, you know, what we said is you've got flexibility to take the income in a better way. You've got the opportunity to leave more money to your children. But the risks are that you could run out of money later on if you don't manage that money correctly, or if investment returns aren't as good as you expect. But the alternative is leaving that money in the final salary scheme. Now, it's a bit of a hot topic at the moment, isn't it? We're seeing companies, it was recently in the press that Mattioli Woods have decided that they don't want to advise on final salary schemes at the moment until a particular review is done by our regulator. What are your thoughts on that, Tom, in terms of how our industry is dealing with this?
I think it just highlights the importance of getting proper advice, and these questions you can't answer sometimes in a numerical format. It's not a case of one gives me X and one gives me Y and one is better than the other. It's very much about understanding your client. I've got plenty of clients where the numbers stack up and we've chosen not to move the pension because it suits them and their situation and or their entire scenario, and others where on paper you would think it doesn't look so clear cut, but actually it suits that client's objectives and what they're trying to do. And that's where you can't just plug everything into a calculator and make a decision. And I think that's where firms are trying to back off. It's very hard to justify a transfer and take into account the fluffier side of things. And I think that's why firms like Mattioli Woods are coming out of that section until there's a bit more guidance from the FCA. But at the end of the day, if you're doing right by the client, look at their objectives and ultimately achieve what they want to achieve, and like Tim said, give them the most informed ability to make that decision, then you'll always be providing the right advice.
So how does the regulator want this advice to be given, and how is the best way that you can make sure that all of the complexities are taken into account? How is the best way to do that, Henry?
I think in some respects, the tricky thing is that the regulator's not making it very clear exactly how they want it. Their starting point has always been and continues to be so that you have got to prove that it's very much in the client's best interest to transfer, and your starting point should be that it's not in their best interest to transfer. I think then you've got to create quite a decent argument to justify why this will be of benefit to the client. What we do here is we use lifetime cash flow forecasting, which is a really useful way of the client being able to visualise how transferring or not transferring their pension rights might be. But there are other ways as well, through something called a TVAS, a transfer value analysis system, that will give just black and white numbers. How much growth from your fund would you require in order to be able to buy an equivalent annuity some years down the line? And so those would be the main ways that one would go about analysing the value to your the client, to be able to value the transfer of their pension rights.
And Tim, what are the pros and cons of the TVAS report versus the lifetime cash flow forecast that Henry mentioned?
Well, historically, the TVAS report has been the go-to solution, I suppose, to provide the answer, particularly from a regulator's perspective. Although recently it's come up to, you know, more geared towards the cash flow forecasting side of things. The con of, I suppose, a key con of the TVAS side of things is that it assumes just that, as Henry says, that, you know, for X amount of years down the line, you are going to buy an annuity with the income, but with the amount transferred. But given the rates that annuities are providing at the moment, it's clearly quite an unlikely decision that clients would make. Therefore, you're not really comparing apples and apples when deciding on whether to take the money and run for the hills or to stay where you are. So that's really the key point, where I suppose it might even be why the regulator did actually think and, you know, do a U-turn, I suppose, and think, actually, this isn't really providing the best way in which we can analyse yay or nay. It needs to be in a lot more of a fluid argument, which is what the cash flow forecasting tool, I suppose, provides us, both us and the client, to model different scenarios together about making a better decision.
Brilliant. And Toby, how can a lifetime cash flow forecast be more valuable then in that case for a client that's making these sorts of assessments?
I think it's a great way, because it provides the client with a visual tool rather than an Excel spreadsheet with a load of facts and figures. It's a really simple way to understand what your current position is and what it's going to look like over the next sort of 20, 30, 40 years, based on your current assets, and obviously whether we can add any value in there as well and try to restructure things. I think also, following on from Tim's earlier point, one of the problems with TVAS is at the moment, which is crazy, the fact that the regulator have used it for so long as kind of one of the pinnacles of assessing whether a transfer is suitable or not, is the fact that it's all based on assumptions. And the assumptions that the defined benefit scheme will use the assumptions that the scheme uses are based on their own assumptions, whereas the assumptions that are built into the transfer value analysis system software, that will actually be determined on FCA assumptions. So immediately you've got a contradiction with the assumptions used. But going back to the cash flow forecasting, I think it's a really useful tool for the client to understand their current and future position.
I think it just cuts through the complexity, doesn't it? You can have all of these different scenarios and different things to weigh up, and in the client's mind that makes it very, very complicated. And the power I see in lifetime cash flow forecasting is that you can really just cut through all the complexity and say, well, yeah, there's all of these things going on in the background, but if you do this, Mr. Client, this is what the outcome looks like, both at age 70, 80, 90, and 100. And if you change strategy and do that, then this is what it looks like at age 70, 80, 90, and 100. It allows them to sort of take all of those things into account, kind of forget about the complexity a little bit and just see what's the likely outcome of these decisions. But one of the decisions that does come into some of the conversations I have with clients is the impact on the lifetime allowance. So Tom, do you want to, have you had conversations with clients around the lifetime allowance when you've been talking about final salary pension schemes?
Yeah, so within the defined benefit or final salary scheme, the valuation method is much more favourable for lifetime allowance. So within the DB scheme, it is 20 times income plus any lump sum entitlement. When you come out of that, it's the value of the pot. And particularly for people without protection, fixed protection, individual protection, the lifetime allowance has been coming down. So these inflated transfer values or high transfer values can be subject to more tax than maybe they were within the defined benefit scheme. And it's weighing up those options of whether it's better to stay in the scheme and pay less tax or come out of the scheme. I might get a larger value potentially, but I could be suffering a larger tax bill, and it's how to pay that tax bill and the various connotations of it.
Yeah. One thing, can I just add to that? One thing that some schemes are allowed to do, but very few do, is allow partial transfer of benefits. And I think certainly with in mitigating risk, but certainly managing lifetime allowance, that if I were to regulate the defined benefit pensions industry, I'm not, but if I could, what I would do is I would encourage more pension providers to allow some form of partial transfer, because clients then can manage lifetime allowance, they can retain a part of a guaranteed income for life, and then also transfer away those bits that they don't need.
I think that's a very good point, actually, and something that we ask as a matter of course for the advice that we're giving on schemes. But if they will allow a partial transfer, I think that's brilliant, because you know, if you could say, well, look, I need an absolute minimum of £20,000 a year index linked for the rest of my life, you could secure that through part of your final salary scheme and then take the rest of it as a more flexible opportunity that if you don't need it, then you can leave it to the children. But yeah, so I think that would be really valuable.
I think that's the problem. A lot of these defined benefit schemes were created in a very different world to where we are now, and that's why it seems sometimes advantageous to come into the new environment, the money purchase environment. It would be nice to see regulation change to modernise maybe some of these older schemes to allow some of the use that you can get and have a best of both worlds approach. Mm. I think that's part of what the FCA review should be doing, not just focusing on numbers and how to regulate and should I transfer out or not. It's about modernising the whole framework. We've had a lot of modernisation in pensions over the last few years. It's about trying to allow these people with the defined benefits to access that too, I think.
Yeah. And of course, I suppose a lot of this comes down to how long you're going to live. You know, if you know that you're going to live to 75, then probably transferring is going to be a good idea. If you know you're going to live to 120, and I know we were talking a bit before this about life expectancies, we assume everybody lives to age 100 when we're doing this sort of cash flow forecasting, but what if everybody was living to 120 by the time we got to this stage? In fact, there is a leading scientist that says the first person to live to 1,000 is already alive. So if you knew that you were going to live to 200 or 120, that obviously has a huge impact on what the final salary pension decision should be. What conversations have you guys had with clients around life expectancy and how do they see that impacting this sort of decision?
Yeah, I mean, you're right, we do. We use 100 as an age that all our clients will live to. For the main reason being that it should take a lot of the emotion away from it, because 100 is deemed to be an age that they probably won't get to. But of course, an awful lot of clients are going to get there nowadays. I think the other thing is that a lot of clients tend to expect that their spending habits are going to change. And it's quite typical that you'd see this through retirement, that you start off in your 60s perhaps spending at a high level while you're ticking off the bits on your bucket list, you're going on your holidays, perhaps you're giving money to your children for deposits on their house. And then actually through your later 70s, things tend to quieten down. And then perhaps your spending picks up if you end up going into care later on.
I've heard that described as a bathtub income. High at the start, low in the middle, high at the end.
Yeah, that's right. And actually what, in some respects, how that really works or interacts very well with a pension transfer is it uses those flexibilities that Tim was describing a little bit earlier. Because actually it allows you to draw the income at the beginning, turn off a little bit in the middle, and then if you need to extract a whole load to pay for your care home fees towards the end of your life, you've got the money there, hopefully, to do so.
But I think it also comes back to the power of cash flow forecasting, doesn't it? You know,
without that.
And I suppose that life expectancy is a big conversation, isn't it? Because, you know, if somebody's got a reduced life expectancy for a particular reason, then transferring out of a final salary scheme may be a better option than it would have been if they didn't have that reduced life expectancy. Equally, I suppose the same goes for if they're not married. You know, within the final salary scheme, they're paying for the privilege of a spouse's pension. If they have no spouse and are not likely to have a spouse, then again, transferring out may be a good idea.
Funnily enough, one of the pension transfers I have done, which was an unusual case, was for a single chap who had worked in a factory his whole life and smoked very heavily. And where, unlike the usual way that you might do a pension transfer, which is transfer out and move it into a money purchase scheme, we transferred out and went straight into an annuity. Because in actual fact for him, we could provide him with a greater index-linked income for the rest of his life than we would have got through the defined benefit pension, wow, purely because of his health conditions and age.
Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant in terms of the fact that he could get a better income. Probably not brilliant in his life expectancy. And of course, there's a whole lot of press around this at the moment because of things like the British Steel pensions. What have you guys seen around what's been happening there?
I think particularly around Port Talbot, there was a lot of pressure put on the members of the scheme to transfer out, and they were given a lot of inducements to do so. And a lot of those pensions ended up in investments which weren't suitable, and ultimately a lot of people would be worse off. And again, it's the importance of getting the right advice. A transfer isn't a bad thing. It's the right thing for the right person, the wrong thing for the wrong person. But I think there's a big incentive for firms to get hold of all these assets and transfer people regardless. And it's often quite enticing to someone who's never invested before to be suddenly told they've got £500,000, £1 million. It sounds like a big number, but if you've got to live on that for the next 50 years, you need to make sure that it's going to do the job. And I think that's the problem. People have taken the cash very quickly, but also firms have maybe been a little bit too greedy in helping them to do so.
And that, I suppose that comes down to what is the right approach. If you are going to transfer this money out, yes, we've seen with British Steel, there was a lot of people put into some really quite poor investments, things like unregulated investments. But if you were going to transfer out this big lump of money, what's the right approach? You know, how do you do it wisely? Tim, do you want to help us with that?
In what ways, sorry, how do you mean?
In terms of if you are going to transfer that money out of the final salary scheme, where would you put it to know that it was a sensible place for the next, what could be, 40, 50 years' time? You know, how would you see that being done as best as possible?
Well, I think, as Tom said it a few times now, but going back to, you know, it comes down to the importance of getting the best advice, or good advice at least, at that point. In terms of making the investment strategy that lasts, it's all about diversification. It clearly depends on what the end goals are, but if, using Tom's example, you know, if the pot of money that's coming out is going to be needed to be lived on, if you like, for a good 40, 50 years or so, it's about diversifying the money suitably to make sure that it's going to ride out, you know, all smooth returns over the long term, to make sure that spikes and troughs aren't too exacerbated, especially if you're going to be needed to draw an income down from the pot. But it all comes down to getting the right advice at the right time in terms of the actual underlying investments for each individual case. That's clearly subjective to each person, but it's just about getting that solution right at the beginning, I suppose.
And is it just about doing the advice right at the beginning, or is this an ongoing thing? Toby, do you want to, is this something that they need to keep revisiting, or can they just get the right advice and then forget about it?
No, certainly. If you're going, or considering going into drawdown, then that's something you need to monitor at least annually, to make sure that it keeps up to date with your income requirements and expenditure requirements. But also just to make sure that the investments are doing, you know, what was first identified. And then if they're not, then, you know, questions need to be asked, and the underlying investments need to maybe be reviewed. But also people's attitude to risk can change over time as well. So the investments that someone may have gone in at age 60, we may look to reduce the risk come age 75 because, you know, their income and expenditure may not be as high. So we can then look to de-risk the portfolio.
Brilliant. And is there, Tom, is there kind of a three top tips that you could give people that at the point of which they're making the decision around transfer, what should be the three things that they're really at the top of their focus?
I think go see a chartered firm where someone who has the appropriate qualifications to give that advice. That's the key thing, so you know you're getting consistently good advice. I think that advice should always contain both the TVAS, which should always be in there given certain situations, but clearly has a lifetime cash flow forecast so you can make better informed decisions about what that looks like. And then also just make sure that you are continuing to monitor that situation over the long term, because it might be that you do annuitize at a later point in time. It's just about doing the process thoroughly, and whilst it might be expensive to go through that process, it can end up costing you significantly if you don't go through that process in the correct way, and it'll ultimately cost you more.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, it's absolutely right, isn't it, that you've got to be looking at this lifetime cash flow forecast in detail at the outset. It should be one of the key principles around making your decision. It shouldn't be based on just a TVAS report. It certainly shouldn't be based on just the lifestyle idea. It should be using the lifetime cash flow forecast to help you make the right decision at the point of which you do decide to transfer or not. But then if you do transfer, you've got to be looking at it every year, because otherwise, I mean, how are you going to tell if you're on track to run out of money? You know, if you're spending it too quickly, then actually, you know, you're on track for a disaster later on. Equally, if you're not spending it quickly enough because the investment returns are better than you forecast, then actually you're missing out the opportunity to tick off the bucket list, as Henry pointed out. You know, you're on track to become the richest person in the graveyard, which nobody wants to do. So it's using that lifetime cash flow forecast every year thereafter to check, have I still got enough? Do I need to change the strategy? Either spend more or spend less.
I think it's about sitting down with someone and going through the questions around retirement. I think a lot of what we see is clients coming to us where they haven't really thought about retirement and what that's going to look like for them, because we can do all the number work, but it's what are you going to do in retirement in terms of holidays, traveling, lifetime goals, and that influences that decision just as much as the numbers. Like I said, you don't potentially want to end up the richest man in the graveyard, or you might want to, but I think the worst thing is not being able to achieve the things that you wanted to earlier on in life because you didn't have the ability to make an informed decision about whether to take that trip of a lifetime or not.
Yeah, agreed. And in fact, that's one of the things that I talked about in my book, The Dream Retirement. And if you want to download a free copy of The Dream Retirement, you can do so at efficientportfolio.co.uk. Just to be very commercial and get that out. But you can see everything there, from the lifetime cash flow forecast that we've talked about, but also my bucket list is in there. So it's very much, it's not just about the money, it's also about how you spend your time in retirement and how you improve your health and well-being in your later life. Well, thank you very much, guys. I think that's been a really interesting topic. I think if you've got a final salary pension scheme, the key is to get advice. Whether you're thinking about transferring or not, you really want to know what the scheme is offering you so that you can make an informed decision as whether transferring is right for you or not. Don't kind of bury your head in the sand and think that's the best approach, because for some people, transferring out is definitely the right thing to do. For many people, it's not, but only with detailed advice can you make the right judgment. So I hope you found that really valuable, and we look forward to doing the next Fit Finance sessions in a month's time. Thank you very much for listening.